Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we've got Jaden Wendell on for the first time. Jaden is a young North Dakota walleye tournament angler who is crushing it this year. And, you know, he's putting unbelievable amounts of hours on the water. And he's a Valley City guy traveling around fishing with his dad, notably. You know, I mean, they've got some tournament wins, but Montana Governor's Cup. Jaden goes out to Fort Peck, Giant Reservoir, for the first time in his life. The Gov Cup, couple hundred boats, two-day tournament, no big deal. Second place. Phenomenal. Figured something out, made good on it. Comes back to his home state, Sakakawea. Now, just because he's a North Dakotan doesn't mean Lake Sakakawea is his home body of water. He's obviously comfortable anywhere, I guess, is my point that we're learning about Jaden. And we figure out how he currently likes to break down water. Fishes the North Dakota Governor's Cup with his dad as well. They get second place there. 260 boats, the east end of Sakakawea, historically. Always a very competitive, always a very tough tournament. We hear all about it. Second place there, phenomenal performance. And then backs that up a week later on Sakakawea again at the Dakota Walleye Classic with another second place finish between Tom Wynn and Dewey Jelm, just a couple of professionals that came to fish that tournament. Another very competitive tournament, couple hundred boats, 2 days on Sakakawea. It's just another super fun story, and Jaden is he's just doing a phenomenal job, and you can just tell for a young man, clearly he puts insane amounts of hours in because he knows exactly what he's talking about. He's very comfortable in a conversation and he shares a ton of great stories. And I really, really appreciate it. And I can't wait to have Jaden on for many years to come on the JMO Podcast sharing these stories and learning from him because, man, he is dialed. So let's get into it here. We've got Jaden Wendell from Valley City, North Dakota. We're all looking to have the ultimate edge on the water, but how do we get there? When it comes to fishing rods, JT Outdoor Products has you covered. Their technique-specific rods are engineered and tested by tournament professionals to give you the competitive advantage on the tournament trail or the extra edge to the passionate everyday angler. They're hand-built in Farmington, Minnesota. With the highest grade carbon fiber blanks and the finest componentry, JT rods are ultra-lightweight, incredibly sensitive, and built for performance. Whether you're after walleye, bass, pike, or panfish, they have every species covered. Their rods deliver precision, durability, and unmatched feel. Don't settle for ordinary. Fish smarter with JT Outdoor Products, where performance meets perfection. Visit them at jtodp.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Do yourself a favor, check them out today. If you like to fish and or hunt in the state of North Dakota, I highly recommend you check out the North Dakota Outdoors Podcast that's put on by the North Dakota Game and Fish Department, a phenomenal source of all kinds of topics happening at the Game and Fish Department throughout the seasons. For example, recent episode topics include pheasant crowing counts or the importance of outdoor education, also the state of the bighorn sheep, and of course, seasonal fishing topics are always happening. Again, if you like to fish and or hunt in the state of North Dakota, the North Dakota Outdoors Podcast is for you. You'll find it anywhere you'll find the JMO Podcast, and if you want a shortcut, you can find a link in the description. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations, and to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com. And get all that. We're talking about the lodging and restaurant options and just the lay of the land and everything going on in the community. There's all kinds of stuff all summer long going on in and around the community of Devil's Lake. That link is in the description. Zooloft Construction from Fargo, North Dakota is your trusted partner when it comes to protecting and enhancing your property, servicing the surrounding area with over 40 years of combined experience. They've built a reputation for delivering exceptional roofing, siding, gutter and window solutions. With a team of skilled professionals using quality brands and products, that's how they ensure lasting results. To sum it up, Zooloft Construction is committed to exceeding customer expectations. If you want an appointment for a free estimate, check out Zooloft Construction at their website, zooloftconstruction.com, or call them at 701-630-0197. All those contacts are in the description of this podcast. You know, for somebody that doesn't know you as an angler, what are some things, you know, some of the stories of where you're from and the fishing that you've been into, you know, that we need to know to kind of help learn who you are as an angler, man? Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, I started have a cabin in Detroit Lakes, Minnesota since I can remember, you know, as a young age. Just started bluegill fishing off the dock and stuff like that. And my parents always said, of course, I don't remember it because I was so young. I mean, we're talking 3-4 years old. But they said I absolutely loved fishing. They couldn't keep me off the dock. They were actually worried. They wanted to go inside or do something, and I couldn't swim, obviously. But I had a life jacket on. But they couldn't leave me out there alone, and they said I just would not come off the dock. But I was at the young age where I wouldn't quite take my fish off myself yet. So they were constantly out there taking bluegill off for, they would say, 3-4 hours a day, which I have a nephew who was about 3 or 4 years old, which is just crazy thinking about him. I mean, he never got into fishing as much as I did, but crazy thinking about sitting out there for, you know, 3 to 4 hours as a young kid, being 3 to 4 years old and not getting bored of it. But, I mean, since we got a pond, we fished off a pontoon, actually, and just largemouth bass fished around, you know, the cattails of Detroit Lakes, Minnesota. I mean, there's some great bass fishing out there. And great walleye fishing too. We never got quite into that. That was about when I turned 8 or 9 years old. I would watch all these YouTube videos about fishing online, and seen some like bass tournament fishing videos. So I asked my dad, and I'm like, "Hey, do you want to go? Can we go fish any tournaments or anything like that?" And I mean, about 10 years back, before he used to fish the Barnes County Wildlife Tournament. It's called. It's we live in Valley City, North Dakota. So it's just about 15 miles north of Valley City. It's a long reservoir, the dam at the bottom of it. Kind of just fishes like any basic river lake, almost like Big Stone, Minnesota, or Traverse or something like that. There's just a main river channel that runs through it, and then just weeds on the side. And honestly, we really had no clue what we were doing. My dad didn't grow up fishing really at all. He actually, I mean, he fishes... He says I fish more than he ever has in his life. So he didn't fish much before that. And we hopped in that tournament. I think I was 9 would have been my first tournament. That would have been. And I guess I just fell in love with it, with tournament fishing in general. We actually remember it. We got 33rd place out of 100 teams.
Nice.
And I wrote it. I wrote it on a piece of paper, and it's still on my grandma's fridge. That's how I remember that. But that's how much I love tournament fishing from an early age.
Man, I mean, yeah, that is an early age, and really just kind of like self, you know, self-induced there with, you know, just being like kind of that next level of passionate about it. I mean, no, we're going to get into some of the better fishing that you've been doing lately, but I kind of want to figure out where the transition really happens from like being 9 years old, you know, and remembering that first tournament experience, to now. Like, what are some of the things, you know, influences or series of events that you feel like were when you were kind of introduced to a higher, you know, a higher level of fishing, or where your learning really started to make jumps?
Yeah, for sure. So, Eve, I remember our local river in town, the Cheyenne River. It runs right through Valley City. Me and my buddies would go down there every day, and we'd fish, and there was a bunch of people, you know, fishing around us. And when we were about 11 or 12 years old, everybody would be asking us what we were doing, because we were learning so much and how to get these walleyes to bite, midsummer walleyes in a 5-6 foot river. And we were catching, you know, 50 walleyes a day. So at that point, I thought it was pretty cool that I could learn something and teach someone something about what I'm doing, and that I was almost, not so to say better than them at doing it, but I was like, I had the advantage kind of a thing because I learned it. So that's kind of where the competitiveness started in the fishing world. And after that, it's probably about, we fished that Barnes County tournament for 3 to 4 years. And then eventually we hopped into an Otter Tail Lake, Minnesota walleye tournament over there. I believe it's the Real Country Classic, it's called. And that was an amazing experience. It was really tough fishing. That lake's really tough to fish, especially if you don't know what you're doing. And at that age, I mean, I didn't know what we were really doing at all. And the first year out there, I remember I was fishing. We were dragging shiners almost in like a 4 to 5 foot flat up on top. And these guys next to me were just absolutely beating them up. I mean, big fish after big fish, all these slots. And I couldn't catch a single fish in that flat. And it almost made me love fishing even more at that point, because I knew I was missing out on something someone already had found. Because I like, especially now, like when I go look for fish, I go look for the strangest bite you can possibly find that no one else is going to be on too. So I'm just constantly striving for something that no one else can find, and that they, that those guys could sit there and just absolutely catch 20 fish to our one. It made me love the sport even more, as funny as it sounds. But that was when it really took off. I really wanted to start doing, you know, more tournaments, do as much as possible. And I asked my dad the next year, and he got a little better boat. It was a 620 Ranger. Before that, we just had a 16-foot tracker, and just an older tracker, which is a perfect boat to start out. And then we went to a 620 Ranger, and we ended up hopping into the AIM series, a partial event, and then they had an Ashtabula event that year. And I thought, you know, I thought we were on the winning bite at partial. It was my first time fishing Van Hook that year. And we were just catching, you know, 22 to 24 inches, which I thought was really something. I mean, those, when I was first starting, those seemed like 30 inches now to me. And I was just having a blast. And we ended up finishing the tournament with around a 20, I think it was 23 pounds at partial tournament. And this is only, you know, this is only 3 years ago now or something like that. So it actually wasn't too long ago. And we ended up finishing that tournament with 23 pounds and probably took the mid pack. And then the year after that, it kind of exploded. I mean, I think we ended up, that year we did four tournaments. And then the next year, I think we probably did 12 or 13 tournaments. And then now we're up to around 20 a year. I mean, every weekend I can possibly hop into a tournament. We hop into one, no matter if it's no pre-fish, a lot of pre-fish. I think as much time as you can spend on the water in a tournament scenario, you know, they give tournaments give you more pressure, in my opinion, which pressure forces you to do well, and it makes you almost learn 10 times faster than you would, you know, just going out fishing, which is, I think, really why I enjoy it. And I'm a very competitive person at that too. So yeah, I guess around last year, 2 years ago, we kind of started to explode into fishing tournaments. And then last year is when I first seen my, or seen some of my first success, as far as like, I mean, we cashed a check in some years before. We took second in the EMS tournament up at Van Hook. And then the next year later on, I actually picked up the live scope for the first time ever. It would have been July last year. So I've only touched the live scope for about a year now. But as soon as I got my hands on that, it made me love fishing probably 10 times more even. Just trying to figure things out and seeing what walleyes do and how they react to certain things. Yeah, it really, 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 made me love fishing even more at that point.
Yeah, I can see that, man. Even from afar, I can see that. I love it. You know, talking about like learning the, you know, trying to get the bites that are underappreciated, or, you know, the weird bites. I kind of want you to talk me through sort of your thought process there. I don't want to assume too much. You know, but obviously in a tournament scenario, if you don't have to share fish, you know, that's a topic that we talk about all the time here. So, you know, usually that's kind of a big motivation for people, you know, to find their own fish, as well as, you know, usually if you do find something cool, it's usually just a ton of fun. I kind of want to hear your version of that story of like, you know, when did that stuff start clicking? Just like, how would you sort of describe your motivation, and then maybe just some of the stories as to like when you saw that happening in, you know, for yourself?
Yeah. Well, as far as the weird spot, weird bite goes, I have a perfect example for that, or like trying to get away from the pressure. The Montana Gov Cup, which was 3 weeks ago, we went out there, never fished Montana. I never been in Montana before, never fished the Lake of Fort Peck. We went out there the Monday or Tuesday before, and they pre-fish for 3 to 4 days. And I get out there right away, and I'm kind of looking around at the map and stuff like that, because I don't like to look at maps too much before I go somewhere. That just, you know, that's not how I do it. I know some people do it like that, but I kind of just like to go there, pick 3 or 4 spots and go hit those, and then just work from there. Because if you get too much stuff going on in your head about, you know, all these spots, and then they start not panning out, then you get pretty discouraged and stuff like that. So I just like to go there, pick 2 or 3 spots before I leave the marina, and head out from there. And the one thing I first noticed, I looked at the map, I'm like, holy moly, look at all these points. I mean, there's so many points out there. There's bays inside of bays, points. Like every bay has 30, 40, 50, 60 points. And it's just, it looks overwhelming. So first thing I do, I go out there. I've watched a couple of YouTube videos. I know most of these people fish points. So I went out there for the first 2 days or so, and I was fishing points, and I was catching, you know, I'd get my 3 to 3 28-plus inches, and then a couple 23 to 25 inches a day. And I just couldn't get on a super consistent bite where I know I could get 5 big ones that I needed. So I looked around, there's pressure on all these points, and I'm thinking, you know, it's Wednesday or so. I'm like, by tournament day on Friday or Saturday, these points are going to be full of boats because, you know, not everybody's pre-fishing right now. And at that point, everybody's going to be fishing, and these points are just going to be loaded with boats. And so I started thinking, I'm like, hey, what can I do? I look at it, you know, bays. I start looking around, and I'm like, look at this one bay, and this bay looks good. I was on the south side of the lake, and way out west, and I start looking at the bay, and it looks different than every other bay. You know, every other bay, it's like a bay inside of a bay with a bunch of points, and this was just, it almost looked like a Lake Sakakawea bay. It just, you know, it just goes in, comes out, just like a normal bay. So I was looking at that, and I was like, okay, we should try going back in here. No one ever does this stuff. And I went back in there. We dropped the trolling motor down, and I started looking around in the live scope and just, you know, oh, there's a giant paddlefish. Oh, carp, you know. And then I seen a, you know, that one looks like a walleye. So cast at it, doesn't move. Cast at it again, doesn't move. Probably about 3-4 casts, doesn't move. So I was like, that's weird. So I went another 20, 30 feet, seen another mark that looked like a walleye. First cast, boom, 20 incher. So I'm like, okay, this is something. They live in here, you know. It's just something to look for. So I kept looking around and looking around, and within the next 30 minutes, I had 6 fish over 27 inches, from 27 to 28 inches within the next 30 minutes. And that first fish I actually seen that I thought was a walleye was a walleye, but the water was such low visibility. It was probably a half inch to an inch of visibility. They needed it, I mean, right in front of their nose. Like, it had to be perfect and for them to chase it. But as soon as they chased it, it was game over. Which on the main lake, you know, you were catching one out of every 20 to 30 to 40 fish you were casting at. Back in that bay, it was probably, you were catching 75% of the walleyes you've seen to get a good cast on them, which is kind of unheard of in the Missouri River system. You know, usually Lake Sakakawea, Fort Peck, everything on the Missouri River system, I mean, it takes multiple casts or multiple casts at fish, I should say, to get one to bite. It's because they're pretty stingy. But when I found them back in that bay, they were somewhat in the weeds, and then they'd kind of pull out into the middle flat basin there. It's about 15 to 20 foot of water, and they'd be suspended. And that was more fun than I've had fishing probably ever that week. That tournament come around Saturday, Sunday, and we were catching 30 to 40 walleye over 25 inches. And the problem was that there was a lot of 26 to 27 inches, but there, it was, you know, it was those 28, 29, 30 inches were kind of unicorns in that bay, which on the main, like, you were seeing more of them giant Fort Peck walleyes versus the bay. But I was able to scrounge out 93 pounds, I believe it was, in 2 days out of there. I just kept upgrading and upgrading and upgrading, and we did end up getting around a 31 and a half incher both days, which really helped back in that bay. But yeah, that was probably my favorite fishing experience. I mean, maybe ever, going back in there and finding that. And we didn't see a boat for 2 days back there in that bay during the tournament, which was perfect. And all the locals come up after and they knew where I was at after the first day or something. Someone seen me fly back in the bay, and everybody knew where I was at, and everybody left me alone that second day, which I really appreciate. You know. That was great of them not to come back there because it was a little area. And they told me about it. They're like, you know, we fished that. That's one of the best bays to fish in the spring. But, you know, we never have actually gone out there in like midsummer because we thought the water temp would be too high back in there to go find walleyes back in there midsummer. And I guess I just stumbled upon the perfect bay because after I found that bay pre-fishing, I checked about 10 other ones. I had never seen a walleye, but that bay was absolutely full of fish.
That was going to be my next question, is if you had time to, you know, sort of replicate that pattern over there, you know, do you have like any speculation whatsoever in hindsight as to why a bay like that, or, you know, or just, you know, what it is about sometimes you'll get on a pattern in what seems like something that's replicable, but maybe it's not that simple. Like, was there anything about that that was, that just seemed for those, you know, 3 or 4 days that you fished it, just made it feel like it maybe was a little bit special?
You know, I still think about that every day because I can't quite put my finger on why they were in there. I mean, I think about this all the time because there's bait everywhere in that lake, and for some reason that bay had no bait. So I don't know exactly why they were in there. There were some weeds in there, but there's also weeds everywhere in that lake. I mean, not everywhere, but there's a good amount of areas with weeds.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing I can think of is there was a lot of skipjack, shiners, whatever you want to call them. But, yeah, them, there was a lot of those. But, I mean, those were – there's more prevalent in that bay than anywhere else. I don't know if they were eating those or not. They were pretty big. I'm sure there were some young ones running around, too, and stuff that they could have been eating. But those fish were really hungry. And they were really fat, too, so it wasn't like they were malnourished by any means. They definitely had food somewhere, but honestly, I didn't see much bait in there at all, which is why I still really think about that, and it's pretty weird. But the one thing that's nice about not being around bait is the fish tend to bite a lot better. We were out in Superior for the AIM National Championship, and we were fishing. So Isaac Lockich won that tournament, and he was back in Pokegama, I think they call it, or something like that, back in that bay, big bay. And we never quite pre-fished that, and we found some bigger fish on the lake. And we went out to the lake, I think it was Wednesday before, because we were just fishing the river all week, the St. Louis River there. And, man, if you want to catch some fish, that St. Louis River, that place is absolutely full of fish. I mean, that's... If you want to go on a trip, I would highly recommend that place, Duluth, Minnesota. That's awesome over there. And, you're catching 50, 60 walleyes a day, eater walleyes, eaters to 23 inches in that river. And we just couldn't quite put our finger on a big fish bite. And I was like, these fish got to be in the lake somewhere. So I went out to the lake, and I was looking around, and I went in about 70 foot of water, and all of a sudden there's a bunch of these marks suspended about 20 to 30 foot below the surface. So I was like, all right, these might be walleyes. Casted. About 3 hours went by. I'm casting at probably thousands of fish, as crazy as it sounds, because there was groups of 20 to 30 of them, and didn't get a single one to turn nor bite. And I it was in my back of my head, these are walleyes, you know. And but 30 minutes later, one turns, and as soon as he turned, he just went up and smoked it. It was 29 incher. So I'm like, hey, these are the right ones. So I need to dial this in a little better. And it would, out in that really deep stuff, it turned out to be, if they would turn at it, they would always bite it. But I mean, it was so hard to get a fish to turn. It was crazy. And I went, and I'm like, okay, they're 20, 30 foot below the surface. So I went straight into shore to about 20, 30 foot to see what they were doing. Because usually, you know, they come off some kind of structure or something off the shore. And that's how they're suspended out there. So I went into shore, and sure enough, there was fish there too. And those ones, they like to bite a little better. They were, you wouldn't see many. You would see maybe 1 to 2 every 30 minutes of looking. Unlike out in the middle, it was all time. But I went in there, and I caught a few, and then that was about the end of that day. And then the next day, Thursday, the day before the tournament, I went and looked for more lake stuff, just driving miles of shoreline. And I stumbled upon this one about mile stretch. And I pull in, and I seen two fish right away. And I'm like, all right, cast at the first one, 30 and 3/4 inch. I'm like, that's a good one. And then cast at the next one, it was like 31 incher. And then within the next 30 minutes, I had 56 pounds on the AIM scale. So that's all, I think 4 were over 30 inches, and one was like a 29 3/4 or something like that.
This is ridiculous.
Yeah, it was absolutely ridiculous. And I was like, all right, the next day, here we go. You know, we might have this thing. You know, we have a good pattern here. I don't know who about all knows about it. There was no one out on the lake that day, where we were at least. And I was like, all right. So the next day, tournament day, we get out there. I'm starting to see the right fish when I get out there. They're not biting too good yet. And then all of a sudden, we actually have the cameraman comes in the boat, which is why this is what I call the cameraman curse, is because I look back and my dad was like, oh, do you smell something? And I'm like, yeah, it smells like it's burning. So he opened the battery lid up, and the batteries are actually melted. Like, they were starting to melt. Like, he grabbed the cable.
No way.
And could move the battery post around in a circle.
No way.
Yeah. So our batteries were just shot by 8:30 that morning, about 30 minutes into fishing, I think it was.
Oh.
And that was a bummer. So we ended up calling the tournament director, and it's like, hey, you know, anything we can do here? And he's like, you know what? Come back to the launch. We'll check you out, and then you can get batteries, and then we'll check you back in. So after all that said and done, we went and got batteries from town, come back, check back in with him. And it was, you know, we about had an hour and a half fishing left, so we had to salvage the day for something. We had 0 pounds, you know, in the AIM National Championship. And I went into the river, ran into the river, and we ended up pulling, and we got 17 pounds out of there quick in about an hour of time. And ended the day there, and then the next day come around, batteries were good. We were ready to go, and first spot we stopped on the lake, we got a 28 incher, and from there on we ended up getting about 52 pounds that day or something like that.
So you were on them. You were definitely on them.
Oh, we were on them. I don't know. They weren't biting as good as that second day, but it would have been interesting to see if I would have been able to get 50 pounds that first day, because I really do think it would have been close. And Isaac ended up winning it with 101 pounds it was. So, I mean, it would have been close if I could have got them to bite that day, for sure. It's one of them what-if moments. I mean, it's tournament fishing. Everything happens.
Oh, for sure. You're lucky you had your dad with a man. I mean, you know, or just, you know, just having a steady Eddie partner. You know, I mean, as you go through life, it might not always be your dad as your partner or whatever, but it's... You know, that's a stressful situation to be in, man. Like, it could just be like a Tuesday night derby, and that ain't fun. But when you're in the AIM National Championship, you know, on a foreign body of water, and you feel like you got a good bite in front of you, like, dude, that is just a torpedo to the hull, man. That is so sad. But a fun bite. It sounds like you put together a fun bite. Now, you know, before, you know, I definitely want to talk to you about the North Dakota Gov Cup, and even, you know, recently the DWC was good to you, this Sakakawea fishing. But, you know, kind of sitting on this topic of, like, you with LiveScope for the last year, I would like to sort of hear a bit of your assessment of yourself, or just sort of, you know, just walleye fishing in general, in terms of the things that you've learned about walleyes that are interesting or maybe new to you, just sort of your journey, you know, learning the technology and learning the fish. You know, it's like, you know, how you utilize it when you go and break down water. I mean, you know, for so many years we talk about the side imaging and down imaging and people that are just, you know, excellent at, you know, putting patterns together and replicating it, you know, with the mapping and, you know, just all the tools that we all sort of have and take for granted. But I'm so curious how you utilize or how you break down water and where forward sonar kind of fits into the mix for you.
Yeah, you know, we just picked it up last year, July. So it was relatively new to me, or it was really new to me then. I fished with a buddy that had one for a while. And we had it on a pole right away, just turning it around and stuff like that. And this year we actually switched it to a trolling motor, which I highly recommend. Helped about 50 times more efficient to be, especially when looking around fish. You can move 2 to 3 mile an hour, 4 mile an hour at times. That's what I do when I'm looking for fish. Pre-fishing, I'll be on, have it on, I think the Garmin setting. We have a Garmin crack, and it'd be on 20 instead of 10 like a Minn Kota, but they say 20. And just constantly going full speed. We'll even put the big motor in gear or something like that if we want to move faster. And we just fly around. I don't quite have it as dialed as the pros probably do and all their electronics they run. I mean, they've been doing it for years. I'm pretty new to that side scan and the 2D and stuff like that. It was kind of almost before my time, kind of. I'm still young at that, so I didn't really get a whole lot of time on that. But I basically just drive around with LiveScope going full blast. Next year I want to put put a LiveScope on each side on the transom or the lower unit area to shoot out both sides, so I can kind of even make it quicker to do something like that, to look around for fish. But this year adapting to LiveScope has really been something. And the thing is, anybody could do it. It takes a lot of time. I always call it screen time is what it takes. Even I help my buddies back home and my dad's friends and stuff like that get into LiveScope. And I actually, one of my dad's friends, he was a cranker. That's all he did. He just cranked, you know, you couldn't change his mind. And, I was trying to talk him into, you know, trying a LiveScope out or something like that. And he's like, I've caught less than 5 fish on a jig rod in the last 5 years, you know? And he would not change his mind. And then eventually something clicked or something, and he had a LiveScope, or he had an active target since probably they came out 4 years ago. And so did we. We just never chose to use it. It was one of them intimidating things where it's not as easy as it might seem from the outside point of view to learn something like that. I mean, it takes tons of time to even figure out little details of everything. And I finally convinced him, you know, here, try this. So this year, about May, he had it installed, and he loved it ever since. And let's just say he's taking his kicker motor off and putting another power pole on the other side now. So he really fell in love with it. He told me he's gonna sell all his cranks, which is a joke probably, but you know, and he's like, you know, pushing 45 years old. So anybody could learn this. It's not just a young man's sport. And he was sitting in top 5 of our local tournament after the first day, you know, our Ashtabula tournament, which is still really good anglers in there. We have a few NWT pros and a lot of great local anglers. That was our Ashtabula one. And we ended up winning that one there this year, me and my dad. And that was a crazy bite that, you know, it kind of ties into what I learned and how these fish behave with the LiveScope. And what was happening is I went way back into this creek. This Ashtabula has a big long creek. It's called Bald Hill Creek. And that's where we caught all of our tournament winning fish. And we went way back in there, and it's all weeds. You look around, you wouldn't even think you'd be able to, from the outside point of view, you wouldn't even think you'd be able to, you know, fish back there for the most part. And the weeds would go up to about a foot or two below the surface. And what was happening is these walleyes would sit on either the edge of the creek channel where there was no weeds, or they were sitting above about a foot or two below the surface in crystal clear water. And I was catching, we had 30, the first day of the tournament, you're allowed to keep 7 fish. And we already had 2 in the box from the morning before, or from the morning, like bite of that day. And we come in there around 11 o'clock, and it was a, you know, nice calm day. I was actually looking to save this creek spot for the next day, Sunday, when I needed it, because it was supposed to be really windy. It was supposed to be like 40, 50 mile an hour winds, and I knew it'd be kind of protected back there. So I was like, I'm going to save this till Sunday. Well, you know, 11 o'clock rolls around, and we have a 25-incher and a 23-incher in the live well, which are still really good fish for that lake in that tournament. And I was like, all right, we need to get these bigger ones, because we were catching, me and my buddy Reed, we pre-fished the whole thing, and we kind of broke down water together. And we were catching 20, we were hoping 5, 27 inches a day was the goal, which is unheard of in that lake. And we pull back in the creek, and within 15 minutes, I had, we were heading back to the boat ramp. It was actually 18 minutes. We were heading back to the boat ramp because we had our 7 fish and our live well that we were allowed to have that day. And I went 5 out of 6 casts. I caught 5 fish over 25 inches. And we ended up weighing in 31 pounds that day, which was absolutely phenomenal. And the 2-day record before that was set the previous year with 42 pounds in a 2-day total. So we ended up setting like an 8-pound single day lead or a record, 8-pound single day record. And then the next day we went on and got our 26 pounds out of there. So it was just awesome. We ended up setting a 16-pound record over the 2-day tournament. And I think a lot of the locals and everybody in the tournament realizes what's kind of capable out there now. So I think we're going to see a lot more of those bags next year.
We're all looking to have the ultimate edge on the water, but how do we get there? When it comes to fishing rods, JT Outdoor Products has you covered. Their technique-specific rods are engineered and tested by tournament professionals to give you the competitive advantage on the tournament trail or the extra edge to the passionate everyday angler. They're hand-built in Farmington, Minnesota. With the highest grade carbon fiber blanks and the finest componentry, JT rods are ultra lightweight, incredibly sensitive, and built for performance. Whether you're after walleye, bass, pike, or panfish, they have every species covered. Their rods deliver precision, durability, and unmatched feel. Don't settle for ordinary. Fish smarter with JT Outdoor Products, where performance meets perfection. Visit them at jtodp.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Do yourself a favor, check them out today. If you like to fish and or hunt in the state of North Dakota, I highly recommend you check out the North Dakota Outdoors podcast that's put on by the North Dakota Game and Fish Department, a phenomenal source of all kinds of topics happening at the Game and Fish Department throughout the seasons. For example, recent episode topics include pheasant crowing counts, or the importance of outdoor education, also the state of the bighorn sheep, and of course, seasonal fishing topics are always happening. Again, if you like to fish and or hunt in the state of North Dakota, the North Dakota Outdoors Podcast is for you. You'll find it anywhere you'll find the JMO podcast, and if you want a shortcut, you can find a link in the description. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. And to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com and get all that. We're talking about the lodging and restaurant options and just the lay of the land and everything going on in the community. There's all kinds of stuff all summer long going on in and around the community of Devil's Lake. That link is in the description. Zooloft Construction from Fargo, North Dakota is your trusted partner when it comes to protecting and enhancing your property, servicing the surrounding area with over 40 years of combined experience. They've built a reputation for delivering exceptional roofing, siding, gutter, and window solutions. With a team of skilled professionals using quality brands and products, that's how they ensure lasting results. To sum it up, Zooloft Construction is committed to exceeding customer expectations. If you want an appointment for a free estimate, check out Zooloft Construction at their website, zooloftconstruction.com, or call them at 701-630-0197. All those contacts are in the description of this podcast. So you're pretty well dialed into the forward sonar. You break down water with it, but you go fast. But now let's talk a little bit about Sakakawea. Your last couple of tournaments on Sakakawea went really good for you. I guess my question is, it's a big body of water. How do you feel like you know where to start looking as far as a pattern or figuring out where these fish are going to be? I mean, are you just feeling just absolutely free to just go out and start wherever and just start looking?
Yeah. So Sakakawea, every pre-fish, I like to have 4 or 5 days of pre-fish. In the first 3 days, what I do is, okay, day one, I'm bay fishing all day long. I'm not stepping out of a bay. I'm not fishing a point. I'm fishing bays all day long. I'm not coming out of them. And day two, I'll fish points or lake stretches, just like along the lake, looking for certain things along baits, suspended fish out in the smelt, different things like that. And then day three, you know, I'll look for something a little more odd. I'll either go fish back in bays again, or I'll kind of key in on, you know, some stretch of the lake or like what I'm looking at, or go look for, a lot of people don't know there's like 15 to 20 foot tall trees in Sakakawea and they're on the 50 foot depth range. Them held a lot of fish and some really, really nice fish too at times. And I'll kind of look at stuff like that. And so for the Gov Cup, first day of practice, I was bay fishing. So I go back into Douglas, probably the most common bay in Sakakawea.
Yeah, and at least within the boundaries of the...
At least within the boundaries of the Gov Cup. Yeah. Even arguably, maybe Sakakawea. I mean, besides,
yeah, yeah, there's a lot of history back in there for stuff, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, a lot of history in Douglas. I'm sure the tournament's been won back there more times than it hasn't, probably. Douglas started back in there, and this year the water's a little... I mean, it's quite a bit lower than previous years. So a lot of the familiar weed stuff I was familiar with from years before was kind of all gone. I was below the water level, so there wasn't any weeds growing. So I started looking around, and then I stumbled upon some of what I thought were weeds, but they were actually shrubs. They were about 5 to 7 foot tall shrubs in the water. And I seen a fish, seen a walleye in one of them, cast at it, and then got snagged. I'm like, oh, these aren't weeds. These are shrubs, you know? And they look exactly like weeds. And ever since then, I started looking around in these shrubs in Douglas and just kept searching, searching, searching. And pretty soon, I'm starting to see good fish, good fish. And, you know, in the Gov Cup, you're looking for, you're not looking for 28 inches. You're looking for solid 23 to 26 inches will do you really, really well in that tournament. And we stumbled upon this one, about 50-yard patch of shrubs in that bay. And I pull in there, and we got a 28 and a 26-incher, which them are monsters for the North Dakota Governor's Cup. I mean, we got 260 boats in a 15-mile boundary or so. I mean everything's packed, and every single point gets beaten up. That's why I really like to look for bays in the Gov Cup. Just because not everybody fishes bays. It's more intimidating to fish weeds and shrubs and stuff like that than it is to go pull bottom bouncers on a point or even live scope off a point, because you can see a lot more clearly. And ever since that, we left that alone for probably like 3 days, the day before the tournament, come in there and checked it again. Yep, they're still here. And then as that was going on, there was a South Shore bite that I found that same day I checked the bay, or the day after when I was checking the main lake stuff, I think it was. And I was checking the main lake stuff on the south shore of the lake, which everybody knows at Fishes Sakakawea, the south shore can be really spotty. It can be really good one day and really bad the other days, and I still don't know why. I mean, your fish will disappear. So the day of the tournament, I actually started on the south shore in a stretch just east of Hazen area. And you pull in there, and in the first 20 minutes, I knew, this is not going to be any good. I seen two walleye the whole time, and when you're fishing the main lake on Sakakawea and there's bait around, you're going to want to be seeing a lot of walleyes, because you got to cast at quite a few before you get one to go. And as soon as I realized that, cycled through a couple spots in the south shore, same thing, whole south shore was dead for me in my spots, and headed to Douglas. And within the first 30 minutes in Douglas, we had a 27, 26, and a 23, which are extremely good fish for the Governor's Cup. So we were pretty happy with that. And then about a three-hour period went by where it kind of went dead. And we were hopping around spots in Douglas, trying to put another fish in the boat. And we actually stayed in Douglas all day. And with about 2 hours left, I headed over to some more weeds. I caught some, 20 to 23 inches in practice, and we ended up getting a 24 and a half and a 23 within, 20 minutes of each other, which there we had five. That's the only five bites we had all day on day one of the North Dakota Governor's Cup. And after that, I think we were sitting in second. We're tied for second, actually, with another team.
All right, I'm going to jump in there, because I'm curious about a couple of things, throughout this story. Now, when the bite goes dead, are you still casting at fish and they're just not eating, so it's kind of like a bite window thing? And I'm curious, too, like kind of, whatever you're willing to share about how you're catching them, because I think that those are just interesting elements that, everybody interprets these things a little different, or depending upon what part of the lake you're on, it can definitely be different. But the whole bite window thing, if you're casting at fish and they're not eating, I think is definitely a relatable thing.
Yep. So Sakakawea, I mean, the lake's just, you cast at them, they don't bite. I mean, a lot of time you cast at thousands of fish, it feels like, before one bites. But I wouldn't necessarily call it a bite window thing. It might have been that day, but from my experience, I haven't seen much for bite windows out there. It just almost happened. We pulled in there and got those three right away, but that's just, I feel like almost because they were unpressured. No one was in there. Mm-hmm. And the one thing I use is a 3/16 ounce white tungsten jig with a full crawler on it is what I used in Fort Peck Gov Cup, North Dakota Gov Cup, and the Dakota Walleye Classic, as well as the Ashtabula tournament I won. Same bait, everything was the exact same, but I fished every single one of those tournaments completely different, which goes to show you how well jig and a crawler works. I mean, it sounds mm-hmm. so simple, but now the walleye world has took it by storm. You know, it's almost a lot of tournaments are won on the jig and crawler. And that's, one of the things, how to get those fish to bite in Douglas is what I figured out. Actually figured out the second morning. I would be jigging my crawler, and in this one, usually when I jig my crawler, I like to keep bringing the fish upward motion, kind of going up at it and kind of make them, they want it or they won't, you know, they won't bite it or they will bite it. Almost make them make a decision quicker than not, then like dangle it in front of their face. But in the one spot in Douglas, I had to keep the bait level with the fish, perfectly level with the fish, and I would just twitch it right in front of its face and just keep it coming. And that fish would follow it. And then when I got to about the boat, it would grab the back tail of the crawler. And now it grabbed the back tail of the crawler, and I'm sitting there looking at my live scope, and I'm like, in my hand, I'm like, this feels like it doesn't have it, you know. Look at my live scope, and I can actually see my jig still, and I can see the wall. I can see the walleye sitting behind my crawler, and I can feel the walleye on my rod. So I'm sitting there. I know this thing doesn't have his jig in his mouth, because I can still see the jig on my live scope, but I can feel the walleye on my rod that it has the back of the crawler. So I'm sitting there waiting for it to, you know, finally engulf the crawler. And about 25 seconds later, it finally went, it sucked it in. I waited there forever. That's the first time that's ever happened to me where I had to wait that long. And finally it sucked it in, set the hook, and that was a 27 inch that first morning. And then ever since that, I think we caught 6 or 7 in there that day in that little shrub stretch, doing that exact same thing. And it was just holding it in front of their face. They're like twitching it just to almost have them come down on it. Yeah, it was something else.
Painful.
Yeah, it was very painful. Yeah. You see 25 to 27 inches have the back of your crawler, and you're just hoping that they suck it in fully. It was definitely painful. You know it's there. They just have to commit a little more.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder if a guy, I mean, do you ever get tempted to throw a stinger hook on, or is there too much gunk down there to get hooked on? Like, is it, you think a stinger hook would help a guy? I'm just thinking out loud right now.
I never tried that. It could help you, but it might mess up your crawler action a little bit, because I mean, that's the only thing I can think of. Because when I'm throwing a crawler, so a lot of guys, they'll just, you know, grab your average crawler out of the box, thread her on. I before the tournament or during the tournament, I actually call my dad the Swiss Army knife in the back, because so he don't fish. He nets, and then we have like 5 or 6 rods that have crawlers on them up front. Mm-hmm. And he's constantly threading crawlers on. And I'm like, get a little skinnier crawler on this, a little shorter crawler on this one, stuff like that. Kind of mix it up fully.
Oh, and that's cool. Savvy.
The one thing, we have a couple different boxes of crawlers with different size crawlers and different how they look. And the one thing I've been using a lot on Sakakawea this year is your medium length crawler. I mean, think about your average crawler, but about as skinny of a crawler as you can think of.
Hmm.
And just that, get that action really flowing. And that seemed to be the trick this year, at least so far, is that really skinny crawler, which that gets overlooked of what people think of. You put your crawler on, you think it's just a crawler. Everybody's using a crawler. But one thing is you gotta really pay attention to what your crawler looks like, especially if you catch a fish, if your crawler is still there in its mouth or something like that, really look at it and see what kind of crawler you have. And even we do the same thing if I'm pitching a jig and a chub. Say you get one to eat a 3-inch chub, you put it on the ruler and up 3 inches. Oh, grab a 3-incher out of the angle, you know, and then throw that on there and throw her out there. And seems to be the ticket is really paying attention, especially on Sakakawea, is really paying attention to your bait.
Yeah. Dang, dude. Well, you're doing really well this year. You're obviously putting your time in, and so you got a good grasp on what your program is. You kind of, you know, at least at these tournaments, you know, I don't know if you pay attention to the rest of the tournament world, but, you know, I mean, Forward Sonar is taking all these tournament bodies of water by storm. But do you feel like there is sort of like a still like a vulnerability or a soft spot where somebody like a live bait rigger or a troller, like there's a circumstance where that is still sort of like in the blind spot of somebody that's operating you know, just solely on forward sonar? Or do you just, I mean, like yourself or just like, you know, the tournament world, it just seems like, man, there's just kind of no stopping it right now. It's like these guys that can, like you, or just kind of have that mentality to cover it. It's like, it's almost like kind of a bulletproof thing at this high level tournaments.
Yeah, you know, it's hard to stop, that's for sure. But I still think there is a spot where, you know, you're going to get them guys winning it with creek chubs or pulling cranks, pulling lead core at a certain spot, something like that. I still think that could pull off a tournament victory, especially in Sakakawea. Your creek chubs, them are dynamite out there. That's been known the last, you know, handful of years from what I hear. I didn't fish back then, but yeah, them creek chubs, if you ever want to feel a pretty hard bite from a walleye, you go pull some creek chubs on Sakakawea out there, and that's one of the more fun things ever to do, is pull creek chubs on Sakakawea, or even common places, Shell Village, Shell Island, you know, on Van Hook Arm, right at the mouth of the Van Hook Arm. And yeah, that's an awesome place to pull chubs. And I still think those guys pulling chubs definitely have a chance. Even one of our local aim guys, Lonnie Jacobs, he took second last year when the national championship came to Sakakawea. The AIM National Championship came to Sakakawea. He took second, and he only lost by a pound to Eric McCoy there, who won that tournament. And he was pulling creek chubs the whole time, as far as I know. And so, I mean, definitely still a place for it if you can almost win a tournament like that caliber with a creek chub on Lake Sakakawea.
Yeah, and I think, too, the one fun thing about your Gov Cup story there is that, you know, you found a really productive stretch that wasn't all that big, whereas a lot of these conversations with forward sonar in the tournament world, you know, it's all about covering water, like who, you know, who can make adjustments and fish new water and just be confident all day going one direction really fast, you know, kind of a deal, where it's just like, you know, you're just massing up, you know, the amount of casts you can make at different fish and whatnot. But definitely, like, that there's still hope to have a tournament with these giant boundaries and you know, all this water out there. But you kind of had something that was dialed in a little bit tighter. I think that kind of brings the worlds together a little bit too, you know, that it's like, this isn't, there's many layers to this onion. I think we're going to be talking about stuff like this for a long time. It's really, really cool, man. Tell me a little bit about the Dakota Walleye Classic story. You fished, you placed second between Tom Wynn, who won it. That was his second time, you know, in a row. So he was certainly familiar with the Sakakawea bite this time of year. But, you know, cool story there. Dewey was kind of a late entry here. You know, team, he was on the waiting list and got a call a couple weeks before the tournament, so he popped in. Of course, he's a Missouri River guy. He's, you know, always going to be a guy to beat, you know, at the highest level on Sakakawea any time of year. But you fit right in between those guys really nicely. Tell me a little bit about how the Dakota Walleye Classic
went. Yeah, so basically started pre-fishing Sakakawea the same as I always do. Bays first, Main Lake second, and the bays this time, they opened the Dakota Walleye Classic boundaries up a little more this year eastwards. I think it used to end right around the Douglas area. I'm not quite too sure where it ended.
Yeah, Douglas Bay was not in the DWC boundary
the year before.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, so that that whole area was brand new.
Yep. So they opened it up from, I think it started right at the end boundary, is right west of Douglas, I believe, mm-hmm. before. And then they opened it up all the way to the highway east as far as you can go. So that was really big to me, because I already had some insight from the Gulf Cup the week before of, you know, what I could do. So I started thinking, I'm like, oh, I wonder if Douglas will hold, you know, the same fish, if I could get another 50 pounds out of there like I did in the Gulf Cup, you know. And then start thinking about 50 pounds, and I'm like, it's going to take a little more than that. We got Tom Dewey here that opened up west. It's a pretty big boundary, you know, 190 boats, and it's a good sized boundary. So everybody's going to be spread out more. There's going to be less pressure on fish. So I knew it would take a little more pounds to do. And we ended up going back in Douglas. My fish were still back in there. And then I was like, I got to find something else, some better bite. So I went back on that South Shore again the day after the last day of the Gulf Cup. It would have been Sunday, because Gulf Cups Friday, Saturday. So I went back Sunday again. Oh, there my fish were. They were back on the South Shore like they were supposed to be the first day of the Gulf Cup. So they were back there. And first day I was out there, I had 34 pounds of actual weight within 6 hours, I think it was. All 27-plus inch walleyes for the Dakota Walleye Classic that first day of pre-fish. And I was like, I was more than happy with that. I mean, I knew if I could do that 2 days in a row, it'd be a done deal. And I stayed on that pattern, just kept working shorelines on that South Shore, and found this one really nice area with really big fish. I started looking around. I'm seeing some really, really nice fish, 28-plus inch fish. I couldn't get any of them to bite quite that day. Or that when I found them, I actually got one to bite, and it was a small one, and it was 27 inches of the ones I was seeing. And I looked around, and I'm like, I seen the biggest walleye I had seen that week was in that Thick City area, and it had to be 32 inches. I mean, the thing was an absolute blimp down there. It was crazy looking at that thing. I was chasing him around for 40 minutes, seeing if I could get him to bite, because I wanted to catch him and see how big he was. But, you know, I just started fishing that South Shore. Ended up actually finding a spot back in Beaver Bay, too, that had some really nice fish. Never could get quite any of those to go in the tournament that day. But that first day of the DWC, I was like, you can have 10 fish in the DWC, which the Gulf Cup, you can have 8, I believe it was. And so, you know, if you catch a fish in Skakwea, you probably throw it in the box because, you know, you might not catch 10 fish scoping a day, especially casting at that big a fish. You'd be lucky to get 10 bites. So I was like, my mindset was, I'm going to go to Douglas, get 5 fish first. They should all be 20 to 25 inches. And then go work on my big fish on the South Shore, which I went in there. And, of course, always like the first days of the tournaments I've been having all year long, the first spot, just dead. There wasn't a fish left in Douglas. I still have no idea what happened there. But I was expecting it to be a lot of tournament boats in there, too. And there was one other tournament boat in Douglas that morning. So it would have been a perfect case scenario if they were in there. But I ended up looking in there, I only spent 15 minutes in there, checked 3 spots in 15 minutes. I knew they were gone because you could see many fish before, and now I couldn't see any. So I headed South Shore to some area. I caught some good fish, and it wasn't until my third stop on the South Shore, it was probably about 9:30, where I started seeing the gold. And what I was looking for in the DWC, which, you know, I'm not sure if a whole lot of guys were looking for it, but all I was looking for was places with zero bait, and it seemed like a ghost town. You would see one walleye every 30 minutes. 30 minutes to an hour, you would see one walleye, which sounds crazy to be fishing on Skakwea, because you can go in the bait or near the bait, and you can see, you know, 10, 15 walleye every 30 minutes, something around that range. So what I was actually looking for was kind of the complete opposite. I was looking for zero bait around and zero fish around, almost like the loneliest possible fish you could find. He was just sitting there by himself, nothing around. You stumble upon him, and they're just bright balls just sitting there waiting for you, coming up, suspended fish, just waiting there. So first spot, I pull into a spot that day about 9 o'clock and pull up in it. Took about 20 minutes down the stretch. Oh, here's a fish. Cast at it. Boom, 26 and a half incher. I'm like, all right, that's a good one. You know, that's a Skakwea right now. They seem to all be fat. I don't know if I've caught a skinny one yet. I mean, they're huge. I mean, that 26-inch class is huge. The 25s are a little skinnier. The 27s are a little skinnier. For some reason, them 26s, I caught one in practice that weighed 7.5 pounds. I mean, that's a big 26-incher. And, so that's that. I pulled up, catch 26 and a half incher, and right away I was like, all right, this is what I want to be doing. And, you know, I wasn't seeing many fish a day. I would see 15 to 20 fish a day, but when I would see them, they would almost always bite. You know, I mean, if you can be getting 25 to 30% of your fish to bite on Skakwea, that's going to be a really good day for you. And, yeah, that's just looking for a ghost town, pretty much. A lot of people would leave the spot. There was no one. I mean, I had no one near me for 2 days when I was fishing. Not a tournament boat nearby. There'd be some local anglers fishing and pulling bottom bouncers and whatnot around the area. but I had no one near me. And I think the reason was is because no one really knew there was fish there, which when you think about it, there really wasn't. I was seeing one fish every quarter mile. It's just kind of a random deserted fish who is just lonely sitting there by himself. And I'm sure in my back of my mind, I'm thinking, well, these things probably haven't seen something swim by them, you know, in probably a few hours. So of course they're going to bite it, you know. That's kind of what I was thinking in my back of my head after I kind of found this pattern. I'm like, oh, that makes a lot of sense, actually, when you really think about it. How it works is because they don't see anything all day. They're sitting down there, and there's nothing around them, and then pretty soon a growler comes by them. And then these fish I'm finding, I was catching fish and bait and stuff like that, and you could get them to – you could trick one every once in a while on the bait, and it would be, you know, it would be the same size fish you're catching out of the bait in the ghost town fish. But, I mean – they wouldn't bite nearly as good.
Yeah.
And they would barely bite it. They would just grab the back of the worm and then eventually get it, kind of like the other ones I was talking about. And these ones that are by themselves, they would crush it. I mean, this thing, this bait is to the back of their throat, and I'm setting the hook as soon as it hits it. It's knocking the rod out of your hand. It's the hardest bites you'll ever feel is with them fish. And that was something else that day. Yeah. Them 2 days there, just being able to put that pattern together and kind of having everything to myself and just fishing out of everything. I mean, you're fishing a ghost town. It's actually kind of crazy to think about that. I think that's going to be looked into a lot more because I talked to a few anglers as well, and they kind of noticed the same thing. So that's definitely going to be looked into more next year, is the trying to find fish by themselves who hasn't seen a piece of bait or a minnow swim by them all day long.
But I mean, well, yeah, like, but to find those areas, because there's so much bait in the system right now. Is it that simple to go find like no bait by, am I seeing this right? Like, do you just got to get deeper, get into that deeper water column or something or it would take pre-fish just to find certain zones that would even function like that.
No, and that's the funny part this year is this Lake's Cockawee is the most bait I've ever seen this year is in that lake. I mean, the whole lake's full of it. Years before, you would go around, you know, and you would see, oh, there's bait here. Oh, there's a nice bait cloud here, and you would notice the bait cloud. Nowadays, you go out there and you look around, and there's bait everywhere you look.
Yeah.
I mean, miles and miles and miles of bait. So that actually was the hard part, was finding the areas with zero bait. It was actually harder to find areas with zero bait than it was to find areas with tons of walleyes. And that was really the difficult part, was I only had three areas where it was not much bait, or like little to no bait. And the one area I had was zero bait, and there was one walleye every quarter mile, and that was the absolute money stretch. And I get what you're saying, because it seems like there's bait everywhere when you go out there. But that was the tricky part, was finding the area with no bait, which is kind of crazy to say, because years before you would always be looking for the bait because the walleyes would be near the bait. But now it's almost like there's so much bait that the walleyes can be everywhere and anywhere in the lake. I mean, they're spread out everywhere. There's fish, there's big fish all from the beacon to the highway. I mean, the whole stretch there, it's full of fish everywhere you go. It's just getting them to bite's the tricky part. And, I mean, of course, there's areas with a lot of fish and bait, and there's areas with little fish and bait, and there's areas with, you know, no bait and a fish every quarter mile, which sounds odd, but that's exactly what we were looking for, and that was the hard part to find, was, you know, finding that stuff with no bait, because there is so much bait this year.
It's definitely not the kind of pattern that you're looking for if you're going out fun fishing.
It was extremely brutal on your almost mentally. I'd be going for miles trying to find these areas with, you know, no bait, and then you'd find an area with no bait, and then you'd be 45 minutes into driving the no bait stretch, and you'd be like, is this really a pattern? You know, am I gonna see a fish? Then pretty soon, oh, here's a fish, cast at it, it bites right away.
Yeah,
so it was. Yeah, it's kind of crazy, because even it really messes with you mentally, because you don't know when you're going to see your next fish in those areas. I mean, you can fish near the bait and you're constantly seeing, you know, nice walleyes, but you're out in the middle, or you're out in, I mean, we're fishing just everything like 25 to 35 foot. There's a nice ledge in the lake almost everywhere. On 25 to 35 foot, there's a kind of a ledge. And that's usually the bait usually hangs out right off the ledge. But in these areas, there was no bait off the ledge. And you'd go for miles and miles and miles, and maybe every half mile, quarter mile, three-quarter mile, boom, you'd finally see one. And when you seen one, it was really rewarding because you knew it was probably going to bite.
Huh. If that first one hadn't bit, do you think you would have made some decisions differently?
It would have been interesting because, you know, you go for another, yeah, first one doesn't bite, you're 30 minutes in, and you go another, you know, 45 minutes without seeing one, then you're starting to contemplate in your head, is this really, you know, work out, you know? But no, luckily that first one bit, and now that kind of solidified that pattern in my brain now. So now I'm more confident in that in the coming years. I think that's really going to be crucial in the coming years, and hopefully everybody learns from that, and we can see some giant bags brought in.
Oh, yeah.
From doing this no bait thing.
Learning kind of cool. And it's never just one thing that's the deal. It's like, you know, every time we learn sort of a new thing to look at, it kind of spreads people out, and everybody has the opportunity to look at everything again. You know, it's not like... it's not like it needs to be like an arms race for the entire tournament field to just look into this pattern, right? It's like, you know, guys that can figure it out, it's going to be a great potential option for some big bags. But for every guy that slides out of a bay to go fish, you know, a naked stretch of main lake shoreline that has no bait, you know, that's one less... boat that you got to share fish with back in a bay. So then a big bay bag might show you, right? Like, it's all good stuff. It's all like good stuff that anybody that's into it and loves it and loves the chase of all this, just having more options, and it's just cool to think about. And yeah, it's, if it spreads people out a little bit, and I think that's cool too, you know? And, yeah, man, that's awesome, dude. Well, dude, I've taken up a bunch of your time, and I'm stoked for all the great stories, from the last couple of seasons, and your learning curve with the technology is phenomenal. You're taking it far beyond. I didn't even ask you if you feel like you have like a home body of water, but it sounds like you've been able to take this year anyways, your strategies, on brand new bodies of water, and you're obviously killing it, so it doesn't really matter. And that's awesome. And you're so right with, anybody can learn this. You know, the technology doesn't care how old you are, and the fish definitely don't care how old you are. So what a phenomenal point to make that, you know, as long as you have an opportunity at some screen time, and it's like, you know, young people that have a good support system at home obviously have an advantage, you know, just for having that time on the water. But man, I tell you what, I'm astonished that there isn't more like retired, 65-year-old, walleye nuts that aren't just like out there crushing it. You know what I mean? Like, you'd think that would be the guy that's, you know, got a retirement budget that can just buy whatever he wants. You know, I don't know. I mean, I might be.
You would think so. I mean, it can. you can learn it. You know, if you're listening, you can learn it for sure. Anybody can learn this thing. It's don't just look at it as a young person's game or whatever it is. Anybody can learn it. I've seen a few guys I've taught learn it that I would have been amazed to see learn it. You know, and it's. I just want everybody to get good at it, and it'd be cool. You know, to see everybody thriving off the live scope.
Yeah, I don't know if you've been promoting your socials or anything like that. If people want to reach out to you for any reason, I don't know. I mean, I know you're fishing a lot. I know you're fishing a lot, so I don't know if that'd be annoying to you. But if you want to, let people know where they can find you if they ever wanted some questions, or if they just wanted to follow along on your exploits, we can end it like that.
No, Jaden.Wendell on Instagram, and then Facebook, just Jaden Wendell. And we post our good finishes on Facebook and stuff like that, but I need to get more into posting my tournament stuff on Instagram and Facebook just in general, because I kind of lack on that. But yeah, I just want to thank you for having me on. It was an awesome time.
Yeah, dude. You're too busy fishing to be on social media, and I can appreciate that, dude. That's usually a good sign.